This is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast. How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by the Salty Dogs? Do I like the Salty Dogs? Arkansas's feel-good country band, the Salty Dogs, has had their music featured on TLC's Trading Spaces and HBO's Rectify. They have CDs for sale after the show, and more can be found at thesaltydogs.net. All right, well, welcome to Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. We are on location at S.E. Peirce Museum in the Soma District of Little Rock, Arkansas. Tales from the South is presented by the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops, and I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my right, playing for us tonight, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Among other things, Mark was a featured house guitarist at Junior Kimbrough's Juke Joint in Tullahoma, Mississippi. And what do you think about our set back here? Y'all like our set? These Delta screen doors with mixed media portraiture are by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox from her Images of the American South collection and are for sale. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. Our listeners can find out more about these pieces and VL at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Yeah! Tonight, our stories all revolve around, in various ways, Mama's purse. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who lived them. Later tonight, Crystal C. Mercer starts out playing with her mother's things, including her purse. And we'll end the night with Carrie Jackson Case and her middle school fantasy purse. But let's start the night here at Tales from the South with Deborah Carroll and a purse full of surprises in A Little Bit of Rock and Roll.
With the volume and conviction of Ricky Ricardo calling his wife, Lucy, the sound of my voice echoed in the hallway. Boys, come here now. Well, my son came down the hall. You hear the little vibrations of little boy feet. Big brother was about 9 then, and he was used to his mama commanding him to the bathroom, while little brother, being a precocious 4-year-old, still had a nervous little giggle when he thought he was in trouble. Okay, which one of you have been messing with my purse? That was cautiously balanced on the back of the toilet. Not me, exclaimed Big Brother. Then looking down at his little brother, continued, it was probably him. Nuh-uh, not me, he said while he put his little fist in his brother's hip. I threw the suede French purse over my shoulder and grabbed both of their hands while marching them into the kitchen. Slamming my purse on the counter, there was an unfamiliar loud sound. Bam! The boys started giggling, even though they knew that they were probably in trouble. Little brother had an incredible talent of being able to find things on the ground all the time. We thought it was probably because he had a low center of gravity. Since he was short, even for a 4-year-old, things were just easier for him to find. Somehow or another, he decided it was okay for him to be able to store all his treasures in my purse. All right, let's see what's in here, I said while dumping out the contents of the purse. It was close to Halloween, so there were some pieces of candy, the fake red leather wallet wrapped with a rubber band since the class broke, some hairy peppermints that weren't in a wrapper, Mira, lipstick, hair pick, and a pack of non-filter Camels with a cool little Zippo lighter with a peace sign. And what did my wandering eyes appear but some little green soldiers that had the end of their guns chewed off from our new puppy, Pickles. Then a big thump, rocks. Several rocks of various sizes tumbling out of the purse onto the counter, slinging dirt that looked like it came from the ballpark. Big Brother was cracking up laughing, and Little Brother crawled under the bar stool. "Okay, little man, come up here right now and explain yourself," I said while grabbing the back of his Scooby-Doo shirt. "Would you like to tell me how these rocks got in my purse?" "No," he said with conviction. I looked over at Big Brother and rolled my eyes. "Why don't you take Pickles outside while I have a little chat with Brother?" He grabbed the leash from the basement door handle, hooked up Pickles' collar, and stepped out the kitchen door, and you could hear him laughing as he went down the stairs. "Ooh, you're gonna get in trouble." By the time Little Brother was close to tears from those big blue eyes, and he knew I was a sucker when that lower lip started quivering, I pulled his little limp body up into my lap while sitting on the stool. "Come here and explain to me why you think there are rocks in my purse." By this time, he was crying big old crocodile tears and huffing in and out like he couldn't breathe. Then he buried his head in the crook of my arm, sobbing. Picking up his little head and knowing that his heart is breaking because he thought I was mad, it was hard for me not to cry with him. "Listen, dude, I am not mad." Drying his tears, I continued, "I'm just upset because you guys know you aren't supposed to mess with mine or your daddy's things. If the weight of all these rocks caused my purse to fall in the toilet, I would have been really mad." Hugging this little boy comforted me as much as it did him. "Okay, little dude, go on outside and see what Pickles is doing." He hopped down from my lap, reached up for the door handle, and slammed the kitchen door just as I was saying, "Don't slam!" Never mind. And off he went. This is not the first time he put things in my purse. It was just the first time I was concerned that it almost slid in the toilet because of the weight of it. That was my last pack of cigarettes, and I just didn't feel like having to pay 50 cents for another pack. This purse was my toehold to be in a weekend hippie. Being short, it was hard to find a shoulder strap that wasn't too long and put the purse almost down to my knees. I've already repaired it several times, restitching the strap to the wooden hoop and carefully tried to keep all the brown suede fringe just at the right length, even though Pickles discovered it was fun to pull on when I walked by her. This purse was the same one that I later used in 1988 when playing the part of a radical professor at Kent State during a scene of Born on the 4th of July, a film about Vietnam veteran Ron Covick that was being played by Tom Cruise. It was packed away after that film with my corduroy jumpsuit with the feathers tied to the front zipper and my platform shoes that I wore in that scene. Some of the young people thought I got the cool clothes from wardrobe and didn't realize they had really been my clothes from when I boogied from the 70s into the 80s all those years ago. Recently, I was on an afternoon walk with two of my grandchildren. "Grandma, is it true that Daddy used to put rocks in your purse?" she said while laughing, and her little four-year-old brother, of similar stature of her dad, was picking up rocks along the way. It brought back memories as if it was yesterday, a time when I had rocks and little green soldiers in my purse. Now my big practical tote bag that holds my purse also holds my grandchildren's iPads and cell phones. Yet, if you turn it over and dump it all out, you can still find Harry Peppermints that weren't in a wrapper. Thank you.
Deborah Carroll is currently working on children's books to keep her 8 grandchildren entertained. She is an award-winning author, artist, and historian who loves finding out about Arkansas's historic buildings. Next on Tales from the South, Crystal C. Mercer discovers the value of a purse for every occasion in My Mother's Clutches.
When I was a little girl, before I was even school age, I loved to play in my mother's things. Her glitzy jewelry, her high heels, her thigh-high boots, which swallowed every inch of my little bitty legs, her favorite cherry red lipstick, and especially her purses. She had a bag for every occasion. Sturdy cloth sacks for toting snacks and whatnots for me and my younger brother, Justin. Leather satchels for paperwork or notary seals she would be doing for my dad, who was a stellar attorney. An everyday long strap purse to match her outfits. And the most glorious clutches for an evening on the town with my daddy or her friends. I'm talking satin, lined in gold, beaded brocade, a clutch in every color. Enough for her ID, lipstick, mint, and a few dollars. When I was a little bit older, old enough to date, well, I'm 32 and I'm still not old enough to date in some of my family's opinion. However, they thought they let me give it a go in high school my junior year. My mother told me a story about why she preferred a smaller pocketbook when she would hit the town. It's simple. I leave the house with $2, I come home with $2. I don't take more than that, so a gentleman can buy me a drink. It's your job to be pretty and not thirsty. Mama, I protested. I don't want to depend on a man to buy me a drink. What if he follows me around? That's what your girlfriends are for. You dance, laugh, joke, talk with them. Make yourself desirable, but unavailable. But before I could get the words mama out of my mouth, she butted in. Don't believe me? You have a father. Thank you and good night. I couldn't do anything but laugh. But as I began to blossom, or lack thereof, it wasn't too much else to laugh about. I had uncontrollable curly hair, which I love now. However, it was a focal point on most of the teasing and bullying I received in school. In addition to my mane, I had the most horrible acne. My back is still covered in scars from blackheads and painful breakouts. My hips were full and my bottom was round, but my chest was flat. While other girls were filling out their bras with the more womanly bosom, I was stuffing my bras with toilet paper. Boys didn't flock to me, only gawked at me. Stress and puberty were my worst enemies. We were always at war. Unsettling enough, I had drawn another and unlikely adversary, my mother. Though I was awkward and not a traditional pretty, people were drawn to my creativity as a blossoming actor and poet. People felt invited by my jagged smile. People liked me, even if I wasn't too much to look at the time. My spirit was luminescent, and there was something that shifted between my mother and I. There wasn't a free exchange about boys or about life. There was conflict and criticism for everything. You think you pretty because you light skin. You've got a color complex, my mother would spew at me. And you think you're so sweet. You're not, and you're not fooling me. She would continue to light into me. Now, my mother was darker than me, but I was her kid. Why would she think that? I came boring through her body to enter this world. It perplexed me. How could she feel this way about me, her baby? Those were just PG versions of the many nasty things I heard from her during my formative years. Insults rained down on me like a giant storm, a storm that never let up. I was always covered in darkness. I didn't think much of anything of myself. I really didn't have any room left between the teasing at school and the taunting from my mother. And there was no talking back, because light skin bruised easily. So I made it a point to silence myself. I felt so small. The only person that defended me was my father. He and I had twin spirits. He acknowledged my light and fawned over my beauty. There was no greater person I've ever known. That bond between my father and I only eroded deeper the canyons of misunderstandings between my mother and I. She hated how close we were, and she made me pay. There was a price on my head and on the head of anyone that loved me. It was a difficult time. I was in my mother's clutches, not able to be molded by her hand, so I was stifled under the control of her demands. I tried to do my best not to displease her. However, I lived in misery being at her beck and call. Most of my friends called me Melancholy Mercer in high school, all the way through college. She was never satisfied with me. I couldn't wear this because of my hips. I couldn't say that because of my lips. I couldn't work there because of my hair. She made it a point to make me believe that no one would accept me. For a long while, I believed that very thing. Until something happened, I found an unlikely ally. I found myself. I picked out my curly hair until it scraped the clouds. I stopped stuffing my bras and let my chest be. I reveled in my jagged smile. I couldn't afford braces and I didn't want them. I just wanted to smile. So I did. The discord between my mother and I never found a harmonious balance. We try, we give up, we try again. But ultimately, we have accepted that we are too disagreeable on most issues. It's hurtful. However, it's necessary to tell the truth. Some mothers and daughters aren't going to be friends. Though genetically tied, everything else seems to unravel. I don't dwell on frayed edges. I remember those times when we were stitched together like my grandmother's quilts. I have even taken on some of my mother habits. I have a bag for every occasion. I have a bag for market, for a weekend getaway, a travel duffel for turnaround trips, a backpack for long days with a jacket and snacks to keep me warm and hold me over, and the most glorious clutches. Beaded wooden handles lined in funky bold prints, and just enough space for my ID, lip balm, mints, and a few dollars. I hold on to that because some stories don't have a happy ending. They just have details.
Crystal C. Mercer is a freelance performance artist and sole proprietor of Columbus Creative Arts and Activism and Safi Custom Homebody. Daughter of legendary civil rights lawyer, attorney Christopher C. Mercer Jr., she honors the legacy of her father by fusing arts and activism. You can find her on Facebook. In our final story of the night here at Tales from the South, Carrie Jackson Case follows Southern woman purse etiquette in A Purse of My Own.
I was never allowed in my mother's purse. Like most Southern children, I was raised right. If my mother needed something from her purse when I was a child, she would send me to fetch it for her. And by it, I mean the entire purse. She, along with the mothers of her generation, was not afflicted with the maternal guilt that plagues me and my contemporaries. She had no qualms about using her children as the remote control or carrier pigeons. Honey, change the channel to 4. I want to watch Carolyn Long on the news. Baby, go grab Mama's purse. I need something. At some point in my early years, I suggested that if she could just say what she wanted out of the purse, it would save me a trip. I wouldn't be forced to get up, go get the purse, bring it to her, let her sort through its vast expanse in search of whatever thing eluded her. Then take the purse back to its usual spot by the door. I could just get the thing out of my purse myself. That was faulty logic. You never get in a woman's purse. Do you hear me? Never. Yes, ma'am. The realization of that rule set in my mind a mystery surrounding purses. What could possibly be in them? Was it valuable or just secret? Maybe the value was the secret. I wanted a purse. I wanted a place for treasure that no one could know about but me. And indeed, I had a series of purses. Little girl purses. White ones that matched Easter shoes. Crocheted ones made by my grandmother. Carried long enough to be photographed and never seen again. But the first real grown-up purse came when I was in middle school. You see, the popular girls, who were just a little bit older, had a uniform. They'd had enough life experience to organize themselves into cliques with matching clothes. And some of them were glamorous to me. I could see those junior high girls walk over to their part of campus when I got dropped off for school every morning behind the band building. The girls I wanted to emulate wore outfits that never changed. It was public school with no formal dress code, but don't kid yourself. Everyone knew what she was supposed to wear. The It girls at Gardner Junior High in the 80s wore white kids, Guess jeans with zippers on the sides, an oversized sweatshirt with a brand emblazoned from an approved list across the chest, and carried a Liz Claiborne purse. I did not have a Liz Claiborne purse. I only had one pair of Guess jeans, but I did have plenty of kids and a sparkling personality. So I had something to work with to get me going on my way to adulthood if I could just get that purse. Now, my family was not poverty-stricken, but my parents had divorced, and the money that comfortably covered one household got thin when stretched to cover two. Beyond that, my mother is, above all other things, an incredibly practical person. There was no way she would spend that much money on a purse. Not for herself, and certainly not for her daughter. I'd scouted them. They were not cheap. The best price that I could find for one on sale was more than $50. There is no way I am spending $50 on a purse for a child. It was not an unreasonable point, and not even one that I really had the heart to argue, and I argued a lot of unreasonable points with my parents. But even though I knew we didn't have the scratch, I couldn't help it. I wanted a Liz Claiborne purse. I wanted to grow up and not be a child anymore. And those triangles stamped on pleather were my entry into womanhood. Despite their bafflement at such an extravagant desire, my parents are kind people. A birthday and Christmas brought cash instead of gifts from them and other relatives. I pooled my contributions and managed to amass 75 whole dollars. So my mother took me shopping at Dillard's in Little Rock after the after Christmas sale. There in the ladies' department, stretched before me, was an entire table of Liz Claiborne purses. And they were all last season's leftovers, and I didn't care. I found a blue plastic purse with fake brown leather trim covered in more triangles than I could have imagined. And it was a bargain. It was a steal. It was $40. I had money left over. It was a joyous day, to be sure. Finally, a real purse, a grown-up purse, a purse to hide my treasures, a purse that was a signal to everyone else that there was a piece of the world carved out just for me. Because you never get in a woman's purse. Never. And I suppose I never gave my parents too much reason to worry, because to my knowledge, they never invaded the sacred space of that purse, or any that I had. They were not privy to the highly secretive stash of lip gloss, mascara, a few dollars in cash, loose change, a house key, tampons, and gum that were the staple of my Liz Claiborne purse. Of course, it was never really about what I wanted to keep secret. It was about the idea that I could keep something to myself. I still hold fast to this rule. My husband, who was also brought up Southern and right, has never been through my purse. The very notion is horrifying to him. My son, who is smack in the middle of his own home training, dutifully brings my entire bag over to me if he hears my phone ringing in the depths of the current tote. And these days, I am no longer trying to look older. Quite the opposite, actually. My place in womanhood is firmly established, and my purse has become a new kind of sacred space, but the reason for privacy is the same. I still want a place in the world that belongs only to me. And I suspect my mother did as well, which was the reason behind the rule to begin with. I never combined the diaper bag and my handbag when my son was an infant. I kept that little space of my own. I try my best to keep his stuff out. Still, even occasionally, there is encroachment. I've been known to pull out an action figure in a meeting while searching for a pen. And labels don't have the same kind of significance they once did. My mother's practicality rubbed off a bit, but I absolutely appreciate well-made things. I have a big birthday coming up in a matter of days. 40. My husband asked me what I wanted. I couldn't really name anything. We'll celebrate this new decade with friends and family and lots of bourbon and laughter, and that's the real gift in life. But lately I find myself lingering in the purse section of department stores. I browse online through the high-end designer handbags. I've been squirreling away a little birthday and Christmas money. I don't have my heart set on anything in particular yet, but I think I'll know it when I see it. And the best part will still be that no one else will ever see the inside. That part will be only for me. Because you never get into a woman's purse. Never.
Carrie Jackson Case lives in Little Rock with her husband, son, and smelly dog. She's a freelance writer, coffee drinker, cocktail mixer, carpool driver, and illegal parker. If you're around at supper, she'll feed you. You can follow her unremarkable but entertaining life at drinksleepbecarrie.com. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to all of our writers. Thank you to our live audience here at Essie Purse Museum. Thank you to South on Main for a fabulous dinner, Lost 40 Brewing for great beer, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops. Additional support provided by UALR School of Mass Communications, the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, Little Rock Soiree Magazine, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Arkansas Arts Council, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. We are open for submissions from all Southerners. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Writer accommodations for Tales from the South provided by Robinwood Bed and Breakfast in Little Rock. More at robinwoodbnb.com. And the Baker House Bed and Breakfast in North Little Rock. More at bakerhousenlr.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by the UALR School of Mass Communication. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can all be found on our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for keeping the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.
Must be jelly, cause Jim don't shake like that. And she's looking mighty fine, she's dancing in a cowboy hat. Well, she piles her hair up high and she shimmies down low. And she piles her hair up high and she shimmies down low. And she's looking mighty fine and she's ready to live and go. Staring back at me. Playing the Walmart towel, Bart Angel. Guitar.